Previously on Colors.
I was 6 and a half when my family came to America, July 27, 1987.
Kao Kalia Yang is a Hmong American writer. Her latest effort is a book called Where Rivers Part. And this talented author in her book talks about the transition from her home country in Laos to here.
My first understanding of this new world was that suddenly, even my mom and dad, they couldn't prepare any of us for what was to come.
Coming up in this episode of Colors.
Tracy Scott is a woman of many talents. She worked on the Hill, she was a journalist for network television, and she spent some time in a war zone during the Iraq War. And she's written a very unique book.
I was trying to go through gas mask training, and I had my earrings on. I always wear hoop earrings. And I tried to put on my gas mask, and my friend looked over at me, and she's like, Tracy, you can't put on your gas mask without first taking off your hoop earrings.
That is actually the title of the book, but it's not a joke. It's a real-life guide to life. The subtitle is A Civilian Chick's Guide to Surviving a War Zone.
That's coming up in this episode of Colors.
Simmering racial tensions.
Segregation now and tomorrow and forever.
Fighting injustice.
I have a dream.
Conflict looming.
Justice! Peace!
Brutality exposed.
I can't breathe! I can't breathe!
The search for solutions starts here.
From WTOP in Washington, D.C.
This is Colors, a dialogue on race in America.
My name is Aya Sadiq. I am Middle Eastern. I'm Palestinian.
My name is Micah Hartwell. I'm white, and I live in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
My name is Amy Hendricks. I am a member of the Cherokee Nation, and I live on the Cherokee Reservation.
My name is J.J. Green. I'm Black, and this is Colors. I told you at the first part of the season, this was going to be an interesting season of episodes, because we've got some great stuff coming up, some great people, and we've had a lot of great people already this year, and we're going to continue that today. This episode today is one of those fun episodes, but it's serious as well, and it's also a very educational episode. This is with a friend of mine, an old friend of mine. Her name is Tracy Scott. She's just written a book. And that book, as you heard, is about going to Iraq and how you get things done there. But it also, in a larger sense, is about how you get things done in life. So here we go. Well, Tracy, first, let's talk about this book you just wrote. It's got a really interesting name. Take Off Your Hoop Earrings Before You Put On Your Gas Mask, A Civilian Chick's Guide to Surviving a War Zone. What is that?
Well, it's exactly as the title says. First of all, even though I come from a military family, my dad was a Tuskegee Airman and my stepdad was in the Air Force. I had no business going into a war zone. But when I saw what was happening in Iraq and I wanted to go, it comes from the time when I worked on the Hill, and a member I worked for said that it's our job to do our duty to serve our country. And my dad and my stepdad did not want me to get into the military. Daddy had a difficult time being a Tuskegee Airman. But I saw what was going on in Iraq and I thought, I don't know how to shoot a gun. I don't know how to rebuild a country, but I do have a specific skill when it comes to dealing with reporters and journalists and communicating and messaging. So that's why I went. But I showed up and around a very, very serious situation. And I walked in and I had hoop earrings on. And when the military officer saw me coming in, I know they were like, what are we supposed to do with her?
Right. So that's why you named it this name, this title.
Right. But also, JJ, the reason I named it this is because actually I was trying to go through gas mask training and I had my earrings on. I always wear hoop earrings and I tried to put on my gas mask and my friend looked over at me and she's like, Tracy, you can't put on your gas mask without first taking off your hoop earrings. And I was like, wow, that's kind of prophetic. And it turned into the first in a series of life lessons that I learned in a war zone. And I just have taken some of the things that I learned and they're bigger lessons in life. And I wanted to share some of these lessons with people who are facing their own war zones. That war zone could be dealing with cancer. I have a very dear friend that's going through cancer. It could be your first day on the job walking into Walmart. It could be dealing with kids and their issues, but we all have our personal war zones.
Well, that's really good, Tracy. I've known you for a long time, probably 20 years or more. And this seems like it's a book about life and basically your assessment of how to counsel people to prepare for and go through the hard things and maybe good things in life and funny things too. Cause looking through this manuscript, the book, I noticed that there were some pretty funny things in there. And we'll go through a few of those, but, first I'd like to ask you, I mean, you told me why you titled that book and you've kind of told me why you wrote it, but why now? What made you feel like, okay, I need to do this at this point, this stage?
Well, first of all, the title is that life is a process. You have to go through the process. If you want to go to school first, if you want to go to college, you first have to go to junior high school. But there's really a little bit of a side story to this, JJ. This is a story of perseverance, and that's a life lesson too. I actually wrote this book 15 years ago in 2009 after I left Iraq. And I wrote it to deal with PTSD. I came back with PTSD. And I writing is it's cathartic for me. And I was going through so much and I didn't know how to talk about it. I didn't know how to go to someone and say, hey, I don't know how to deal with this. So the life lesson is I wrote the book 15 years ago and now. 15 years later, it's finally going to be published. When I first wrote it back in 2009, I actually went to New York to meet with some publishers to pitch it. And they all were like, what are we supposed to do with this? Where are we supposed to put it on in the book section? And I was like, put it on the bestsellers list. It's a good book. Yeah. But they didn't know what to do with it. And so I kept tooling with it. And then finally, a couple of years ago, I pulled it back out and I said, you know, there's so much going on in the world right now. And a few months ago, I went to a friend of mine and I said, look, read this book. And I've been handing the manuscript out to different people. And everyone who reads it is like, this is great. You got to get it published. And now even more so, it's in June, it will be 20 years since we handed sovereignty back over to the Iraqis. So the timing is perfect. But also look at the world situation we're in. And I think you read there in the book, war zones are no joke.
Yeah.
They are awful. And I'm sure we could talk about that more in a minute. But the timing actually is better now because the story is still relevant 15 years after it was written.
Tracy, you're exactly right about so many things you just said, including writing the book for your own psychological purposes to help you through some things. Because interestingly, I had a similar experience myself being a reporter in Iraq and Afghanistan and some of those places back during the Iraq War, and coming home after only a solid month there. I mean, nowhere near the amount of time you spent there, but the kind of things that I had seen and things that had happened while I was there, you know, a fellow reporter that I was traveling crossed paths with, was her, she lost two members of her crew because of a roadside bomb. She ended up seriously wounded. Seeing her in the hospital, just not sure what was going to happen to her. A lot of things happened when I came back. I tried to write things down, and I tried to do that, but it didn't work then, maybe now. But this is inspirational from a number of different perspectives. But also, I've known you for a long time, as I said, but and you always have this $5 million megawatt smile on your face, and I'm wondering how you do that. Reading through this and remembering what I know about you and your experience, how do you do that?
Well, first of all, the reporter, if you don't mind, I knew that reporter, and I don't have to say her name, but it's the same person. As a matter of fact, she was trying to interview me in Iraq, and we couldn't do it. Things just didn't work out. And the crazy part is I met her crew. I knew her crew. I went to dinner with them. I knew the reporter. And then the craziest part was I was doing a trip with some members of Congress and saw her in Landstuhl after the incident. I know exactly what you're talking about. And the megawatt smile, if JJ, when the book comes out, you will notice there's a author's picture on the back of the book. The author's picture is me in a helicopter, and I'm got that smile, and I'm happy, and I'm thrilled. And I look like a little kid in the back of a Black Hawk helicopter flying for my first time. But then when you look on the front of the book, when it comes out, there's a picture of me in a helicopter, completely different. I look like I am so done with this. You could see it in my face. The helmet's not on my head. The smile is not there. It's just me. And I look like, it looks like I've been through hell.
Yeah.
And that's what the war zone did. But as you mentioned, and I've said in the book, there were moments when we could laugh, and those moments that we could laugh, we so took advantage of it. Yeah. And now again, 15 years later, my smile is back. It took a long time for me to smile again. It took a long time for me to even to be able to cry again. I had lost all of my emotions. I was just in this dark emotionless hole. And that's partly what PTSD is. When you don't feel anymore, you're in a black hole. Yeah. And it's past being numb, because when you hear about something initially, you may react, you may become numb, but this is where there's nothing. And so it took years. Did I go through therapy? No. Did I? I think it's by the grace of the good Lord and time that I finally was able to smile again. But it has taken this long to get there. So because my mom died right after I came back from Iraq, which really added to everything that I was going through.
Sorry.
And so it was a pile on.
Yeah. I'm sorry about your mom. Tracy, a couple of the chapters in this book have some really interesting titles. There's one, it says, honey, or sir, I think I blew up our car. What is that about?
Well, it's funny you picked that one out. That particular, there was a movie years ago about a guy who was a scientist and he was experimenting, and he accidentally shrunk his kids in his experiment. And then in the other part of his experiment, he reversed it and the kids were enlarged. Well, this happened during a time when we occasionally had an opportunity to go off outside the green zone into the red zone and meet with people. And on this particular occasion, I had an SUV an SUV, the cars were a dime a dozen. If you could get the keys to a car, it was a really big deal. So I went to our boss. I said, hey, I want to use the SUV. A couple of us are going to go meet some people for dinner tonight, and we can't drive out in the red zone. And they're like, okay, fine. Here are the keys to the car. And we only had, I think, two vehicles in our office. So I didn't know where to park the car when we went to the checkpoint. And there was this soldier in a tank. And I said, hey, can we just park our car over here? And he's like, yeah, go ahead. It's fine. So we meet our security team. They take us to the dinner. We have a great time. And as we come back, we notice there's a lot of activity at the same checkpoint. We're like, okay, what's going on? And then we walked up and the soldier's like, get down. And we're like, oh, get down. What? And he said, there's a suspicious vehicle. And we're like, what? It's over there. And I'm like, wait a minute, our vehicle's over there. And next thing you know, there was a boom and the suspicious vehicle was exploded. And what was so sad was the people that I was with, Christy and Jared, we started laughing. We're like, oh my gosh, they blew up our car. Oh my God, how are we gonna? And we went into this awful giggle fit. Finally, to make a long story short, the next morning, I had to go to the Joint Operations Center and report it. And when I reported it, the soldier started laughing at me because I said, I think I blew up our car. And they thought it was hysterical. And they described the car. It wasn't ours. When I went the next day to go get the vehicle, the car right next to it was blown to pieces, but the SUV, not a scratch. And I was like, those EOD guys are really, really good.
Yeah, it's like armor plated too. You know, that helps as well too.
Well, no, this is the bad part. This wasn't one of the armored plated ones. This is just a regular civilian SUV that you see driving down the street. It wasn't the armored car. Oh, it was regular SUV. So that makes it even crazier.
So this was the average everyday Tahoe, huh?
Yes. This is your Tahoe that, you know, soccer mom Tahoe that you're driving the kids to soccer practice.
Well, you know, I've heard that story too from Christy. And
Yeah, she was with me.
That's
she
very interesting. The other another chapter is if you're be nice to the mean girl who greets you when you arrive, you never know when you'll see her again. Okay. I'm assuming that there is a little bit of that going on everywhere.
Yeah.
And so Warzone is no exception. What was that about?
Well, also, this is a life lesson and be nice to everybody. But when I arrived in Iraq, I had these illusions of grandeur that there would be some big burly Marine to greet us when we finally got to Iraq. And so when the plane landed and we get off the plane and there's this person screaming at us, get your stuff off the pallet. Well, they were trying to rush us to hurry up because we could have been attacked at any moment. And so I look over and the person is screaming. It's not some big burly Marine. It's this little Air Force chick. And she's tough. And I'm like, that's not what I expected. And so I was trying to carry my stuff. She said to put it on the pallet. She's yelling at us to hurry up, put our stuff on the pallet. I didn't even know what a pallet was. And I overpacked and I had too much stuff. And I looked over and I could have sworn this mean chick was looking at me, laughing like this civilian chick brought too much and now she can't carry it. So fast forward to that night and I get to my trailer and I've been up. It took me 3 days to get to Iraq, to Kuwait, and then another couple of days to get to Baghdad. So by the time I finally got to my trailer to lay down and go to sleep, I was exhausted. And I put my stuff in. I was like, oh, I've got a roommate. Okay, fine. So I put my stuff down in a heap and I lay down in the bed and I just start to fall asleep and I hear the door jiggling. And I was like, oh, this is my roommate. Oh, I wonder who my roommate is. And I get kind of excited. Oh, I heard this voice. You left your key in the door. I'm like, oh, God, you know that voice. And the door opened. It was the chick. It was the chick from the airport that was yelling at us. The Air Force chick. I was like, this is my roommate. Oh, no, this is horrible. This is awful.
Yeah.
And I say it in a much more colorful language in the book.
Knowing you, I'm sure it was very colorful. But But just a couple more things here, Tracy. What do you want people to get when they finish the book? What do you want them to have gotten from this book?
As I said at the top of this, JJ, first of all, we all have our personal war zones. And as I said, it could be you dealing with cancer. It could be you dealing with kids that have special needs. It could be just showing up to work every day, having the strength to get up and go into a job that you may not like. But there is a process to going through a war zone. And if you go through the process and you endure and you persevere and you go back and you go through the process, you will come out stronger on the other end.
Well, Tracy, we're talking about this in part because it's such a great story, but also you're a Black woman. Colors, A Dialogue on Race in America is all about all of the aspects that involve race. And it's not just the stuff we know about here in America, but it's also the stuff that takes place anywhere at any time under any circumstances to people of color. And let's face it, we're all people of color, regardless of what color it is, whether it's white, Black, you know, anything in between or beyond. And, you know, right now in this country, we're having some concerns again about racial issues that we thought were fixed, or a lot of people thought were fixed years ago, but some of us knew they weren't fixed. So how do you believe this book could possibly lend some support to those folks who are, again, going through some of those things that we thought, you know, the civil rights movement were going to fix years ago?
Well, JJ, I'm so glad you asked that question, because my secret hope is that this will bring people together. It's such a small book. But when I was in Iraq, first of all, the people that I was around, other than the military people, civilians, I was most of the time the only Black woman. And between me and Christy and Susan, who I write about in the book, they were my battle buddies. And quite honestly, when you are in the foxhole, when you're in the war, when you're in the battle, color does not matter. The mortars do not differentiate between hitting somebody that's Black or white.
Yeah.
And me and Christy and Susan talk about this because we are so close. We went through hell together. And at that point, you're in survival mode, and you don't have the time to worry about whether the person sitting next to you is Black or white.
Exactly.
And I'm afraid, I don't know what it's going to take to bring this country back together, but I hope that it doesn't take some large attack or astronomical event to bring us back together. Look what happened on 9/11. We pulled together as a country.
Yeah.
I hope it doesn't take something like that. And it hurts my heart that we are. You know, when I was a little girl, my dad lived in Texas. My dad was from Texas, and we used to go to Texas. And I still remember seeing the Black and white drinking fountains, Blacks only, whites only, as a very little kid. But for some reason, that image is stuck in my head. And right now in this country, it's almost as if some of those separations are coming back. And that's what hurts so much.
Yeah.
And then also, as a Black female civilian dealing with military officers, what I don't have in the book is I ended up working at Fort Riley, Kansas. I worked for 16 Army generals, 16. I was like a political advisor to them. When I first walked in the room, because I was not in uniform, they didn't know what to do with me. They didn't know how to rank me. They didn't know where I fit. Same thing in Iraq. I was working around the likes of General Petraeus. And when I showed up, at first I was like, okay, I'm wearing hoop earrings. And they probably are separating me because of that. But deep down, I'm like, okay, is it because I'm a Black woman that's showing up here in a war zone and I'm leading this little thing right here? I didn't want to think that. And I tried to stuff that down. And I said, the only way that I'm going to get anywhere with these men is to prove that I am capable.
And you did it.
I can get my job done. And I can do it, and I can do it well.
And you did it. And you did it. Tracy Scott, amazing book, amazing story, amazing woman, amazing life. Stay tuned for some thoughts about race in America and details about our next guest.
You're listening to Colors.
My name is Tommy Ka, and I'm Chinese Vietnamese American from Memphis, Tennessee. I went to Graceland Elementary, doesn't exist anymore, in Whitehaven, which is where Graceland is. As a child, I had a lot of things that kind of went past my head, of things that the little microaggression, the codes that people use to spell out that I'm different, that went over my head. But now, you know, in retrospect, looking back, I'm able to describe a lot of things that experience, or being able to put words to. And it was, you know, still strange. I think strange is a very proper description of it.
This is Colors, a dialogue on race in America.
If you have any questions or comments about Colors, send us an email. You can reach us at colors@thecolorspodcast.com. That's colors@thecolorspodcast.com.
Coming up in our next episode of Colors.
Her name is Natasha Ghanaian. She's got a very interesting and unique story to tell.
One of the things that makes my experience unique when I talk to even other members of my own community, which is the Arab American community, is the fact that I was born and raised in Iowa City, Iowa. I think from quite an early age, I became very aware of my brownness and my otherness in a predominantly white space.
That's coming up in our next episode of Colors.
Another one's in the book, and we're on to the next one. Thank you so much for everything you've done to make Colors what it is. Thanks for your ears, thanks for your eyes, your suggestions, thoughts, and everything. Thanks to Jesse Gallagher. Thanks to Cosmic. Thanks to Akash Gandhi. And thanks to Offshane for our music. And thank you to everybody that's helped us put this show together. Mike Jukaitis, Hillary Howard. Thanks to Joel Oxley. And thank you for listening. And most of all, I'd like to say to you, keep talking to each other.
And just as important, keep listening to each other.
You can subscribe to Colors wherever you get your podcasts. This is Colors, a dialogue on race in America.